people off the flow of food and fuel and what's needed to survive to keep more than 2 million people alive. The authorities limited imports to just a few tons that would be allowed to pass through to try to break the siege on the ground. Seemed impossible until the world heard the sound. Watched the aviators streaking through the sky to try to find out how much cargo they could fly.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, citizens of towns and cities around the world have gathered weekly in solidarity with the people currently being butchered wholesale by the Israeli war machine in Gaza and harassed by organized thuggery in the West Bank and East Jerusalem. Meanwhile, the bombs, bullets, and bandages necessary for Israel to continue the carnage are being supplied by the factories of countries like Canada and Germany, the Netherlands and the UK, and in the United States, prime supporter and supplier of the current horror. One determined group decided to take its protest from the courthouse steps to the gates of the local munitions factory, putting their bodies in the path of the satanic mill they called the slaughterhouse. Nick Moturn is a journalist, author, and co-coordinator with Kathy Kelly of BanKillerDrones.org, an organization founded to, quote, inform the American public about the illegality, immorality, and dreadful human consequences of U.S. drone attacks. His articles appear across the internet and at covertactionmagazine.com, where I found his recent piece, co-authored with Veterans for Peace activist Jack Gilroy, Welcome to the Slaughterhouse. Well, welcome back, Nick Moturn, to Guerrilla Radio.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate speaking with you always.
Well, it's my great pleasure, of course, Nick. Now, the last time we talked, it's been almost exactly 8 months. You were then bound for the International Summit for Peace in Ukraine in Vienna, Austria. Before talking about the next war, Nick, what's the latest you can tell us about the near forgotten, in North America at least, continuing war in Ukraine and Russia?
Well, I haven't been following it in a detailed way as much as I was earlier on, because as most people in this country right now, we're focusing our attention on trying to force our political establishment to stop sending weapons to the Israeli Defense Forces and to work for a ceasefire. However, I have been following the events in Ukraine enough to know that there's an increasing reliance on weaponized drones and on 155-millimeter artillery shells by the Ukraine government. The Russians are also, of course, very much involved with drone attacks. And yesterday, I was looking through some old photographs of protests that Banned Killer Drones have been a part of for, you know, and I've been a part of opposing drone warfare along with other people since really 2010, some people 2009. And that's a long time ago. And I came upon a picture of a drone replica that we've built and used in a number of places. And it was at the Horsham Air National Guard Station in Horsham, Pennsylvania. And the sign under the drone said, "Drones bring endless war." And that's something that is proven to be very, very true. You know, some people say, well, it's good that, you know, Yemen or smaller countries have weaponized drones, so that makes it more on a par with the United States and, you know, Russia or other countries that have drones. But the fact is, in all of these wars, when the commanders can send missiles and particularly drones in the place of people, it makes them feel that they can do things that they would not choose to do otherwise in terms of killing, harming other people. And we've had quite a lengthy set of conversations over the last month and a half within our Banned Killer Drones meetings about the need for the United States and other countries to fully embrace nonviolence as a way forward, and how our economy in the United States, and probably it's true in Canada too, are very much based on colonial violent enforcement of economic rules and economic arrangements. So part of it would be to say, what kind of economies would we have if they weren't based on death dealing, either from directly from export of weapons, the money that's generated, or if the economies were not based on cheap oil that has really gotten at gunpoint in various places around the world, if it were not based on cheap labor that in many countries people are suffering from governments holding wages down because those governments want to comply with colonial dictates from the United States, from Europe, or from Canada. So it's a very deep problem we're in, and Martin Luther King Jr. spoke about this in his speech Beyond Vietnam in 1967, about how if we keep being obedient to a religion of militarism and these colonial arrangements, we will be protesting over and over and over again. And of course, that's proven to be, you know, what happens. The drones were really, U.S. drone warfare was really amplified by Barack Obama. And so he was preaching that this was a much more precise way of carrying out wars. It didn't require our troops to go anywhere. It didn't require huge, aircraft to bomb people. This was very precise. Well, it proved to be a complete lie, because drones terrorize tens of thousands of people when they're and I live in Northampton, Massachusetts. If a drone killed somebody on the street here, this city would be terrorized for weeks and months to come, especially if they heard more drones flying overhead. So this so-called promise of automated warfare and precision is total malarkey. And all it does is give generals and politicians ways to keep trying to force their will on other people by killing them. And now we see Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, saying 4 days ago that he has a goal of producing 1 million weaponized drones next year to use against Russia. I don't know what Russia's plans are, but obviously they're going to produce hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands, who knows? Then we see in the same thing happening in the Middle East, where virtually every interview that you can see on Al Jazeera, you can hear drones buzzing around if you're hearing an interview from Gaza. And we have the U.S. now sending its own Reaper drones that killed so many people in Afghanistan, circling over Gaza, saying that the U.S. is looking for hostages, when almost certainly they're helping the Israeli Defense Forces target people, augmenting the drones that Israel is very effective at producing itself. And we find the U.S. using Reaper drones in Yemen to survey and almost certainly to kill people there. And we have them certainly in Iraq and Syria, helping with the attacks there. So it looks like weaponized drones are very much not only in our future, but these wars are very much in our future. And we've been talking about this actually since 2009. People in the United States just don't get it. People in other countries, especially on the receiving end of this, understand this very well. And these drones keep alive the hope, if there is anything that you could call hope, of the Ukrainian military or the U.S. military, that somehow they can prevail, when history has shown them for the last 20-some years that these drones are not decisive in any way. The U.S. has had to leave Iraq. The U.S. has had to leave Afghanistan. All places where the U.S. has intensively used drones and various means of electronic warfare. So that's a very long answer to your question, but I hope
it's helpful. Well, the drone of drones overhead is something that people in Gaza have been, I wouldn't say become accustomed to, but they certainly are familiar with for many, many years. And Israel was one of the pioneers of the technology itself. And there's also the idea when the robots aren't your proxy warriors, the old-fashioned way is to use proxy countries like Saudi Arabia in the case of Yemen being used as a proxy to destroy that country. Well, they've decided that they're not going to do that anymore. And in Ukraine, Zelensky, as you mentioned, where it seems like a whole generation of Ukrainian young men has been lost to this conflict that is largely viewed by those that study these things to be really a proxy war by the United States and the West against Russia because of its reluctance to go along with the hegemony emanating Washington.
Exactly. Yes. And at the same time, we have the U.S. Air Force wanting to keep the Reaper drones. And now the idea is to improve things with artificial intelligence so that one drone operator can control three Reaper drones at one time, and also have it so that smaller explosive drones can be launched and controlled by the larger Reaper drones. And so we not only move to having fewer humans involved, but more decisions about killing being made by artificial intelligence. Now, the military will say, no, there's always a human in control. But if artificial intelligence is gathering the information visually through electronic cameras and coming to conclusions about where there are targets and who the targets are, and then presenting the drone operator with options of what to do, you've basically taken away any kind of useful intelligence about who exactly are you killing, because you're depending on the artificial intelligence to select your targets for you. And once that happens, of course, the idea of human rights or whatever that might have attached itself to, you know, thinking about any kind of warfare really goes out the window. And we find ourselves also in the United States and maybe in Canada too. I would say a majority of the population disengaged politically and certainly disengaged from concern about what happens to people in other countries. And I should say that I base that on my experience here in Northampton, Massachusetts. There are two other people and I were on a 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. fast around the Gaza slaughter. And we go out pretty often in the street with our signs, handing out leaflets, asking people to call their politicians to stop the slaughter. And there's a real support coming from younger people, particularly, but I would say the majority of people either are disengaged or like the slaughter that's going on in Gaza. And so then you have to ask yourself, where is the political pressure to prevent drone warfare or warfare generally, unless it directly personally involves people in highly industrialized countries who manufacture these weapons? I don't know how it is in Canada. Maybe you could tell me about that.
Well, I'm embarrassed to say, well, more than embarrassed, disheartened to say that at our weekly protests in my city, which is about 350,000 souls in size, we've got, you know, maybe between 300 and 500 people coming out to the weekly vigils that are still going on, months into this, which is great, but it represents a minuscule percentage of the overall engagement of citizenry here with the absolute horror. I can't imagine that if any of these citizens spent even 1 hour on the ground in Gaza, that they would return as fervently anti-war and would be activated. But somehow there seems to be a miasma, a hypnosis, a somnambulism. I don't know how to describe it, but there seems to be very little uptake. And as far as the industrialization of war and the profit making of it and the government support of it, as so common in the United States, it's the same here, although the scale is, of course, much smaller. In fact, we have up here we've always been known as a branch plant kind of economy, and we have a branch plant of General Dynamics here that influences government policy when it comes to becoming engaged with these kinds of adventures. Ironically, though, Nick, you know, the drones had been sold to the American people and more broadly too, as a way to save lives of servicemen, of American servicemen. And we've seen at the same time an increase in the targeting of civilians, unprecedented in Gaza right now, with it's almost entirely 99%, I would argue, of the victims of this are civilians. Are civilians there. But there is something, there was a funding bill I just heard on the news today, Nick, down there in the States, the standalone bill to send billions more to not only Ukraine, but Israel as well. And it got hung up. Do you know much about that?
No, I don't know about it, but I think that it has to do with the prospect of Donald Trump being president, and I think that he is slowing things down so that he can, you know, come on board and fix them, quote unquote. But I also think that he may have decided that he wants to be on a much more friendly basis with Russia than what's happening right now. As far as what's happening with Israel, I think that's a very complex thing in democratic politics and some Republican politics, because there's a lot of indication right now that many, many people are not going to be voting for Joe Biden. And so there may be some reluctance to spend as much money on Israel as what the administration wants to spend.
Well, but Trump too was a big supporter of Israel when he was in power, even moving the American embassy at the cost of God knows what to Jerusalem, which was a very controversial thing at the time.
Mm-hmm. I think it's very hard to tell what his goals really are.
Well, one thing I can be sure that his son-in-law isn't going to be so chummy with the Saudi Arabians as he was at the first go-around. They've come out unequivocally against what's going on in Israel, and they won't have anything to do with them. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Nick Mocher. Nick's a journalist and author, and he's the co-coordinator with Kathy Kelly, who's been on this program many times, of BanKillerDrones.org. It's an organization founded to inform the American public about the illegality, immorality, and dreadful human consequences of U.S. drone attacks and war more generally. Nick, when I said we have a subsidiary plant, tell me about the Army Ammunition Plant, the General Dynamics plant down in Scranton, that your article, yours and Jack Gilroy's article at Covert Action Magazine is about. And first, is this the same Scranton made famous by the current sitting president?
Well, it is our so-called, I have a hard time even calling him president because
resident, you know, then.
We've got such a bought off federal government by billionaires and corporations that I even question whether we should have a boycott. I think we should have a boycott of voting for federal offices here, in the same way that some people boycotted elections in South Africa when it was an apartheid government. Hmm. there is absolutely no indication that anyone in Washington is paying serious attention to the slaughter that's going on in Congress or in the White House. It's as though, well, those people will be killed off by November. Everything will be, you know, there'll be no war in Gaza because all the ones who are dead that they want dead will be dead. And we can move right along to the next thing, whatever that is, maybe a war with China. Who, I mean, God only knows.
Well, I think it's Iran, but.
Or Iran. It's no, you can't tell what's in these people's heads. But they're not listening to what, you know, how people are feeling in this country, because there are a lot of people who are horrified by what's going on, but they're totally, as you say, zombies, sleepwalking, hope it goes away. But it doesn't change the fact that people are really, really upset. And so you look down in Scranton, Pennsylvania, Joe Biden's hometown, and Scranton is at the sort of center of a whole military industry. There's a place called Tobiana in Pennsylvania, where they, a massive 5,000 people working there, where they repair electronic equipment, including equipment for Reaper drones. There's a Lockheed Martin plant north of Scranton, where they make these long-range missiles that we're so happy to ship over to Ukraine. The plant in Scranton itself has boosted. They've gone now to, you know, 7 days a week, and they were making 15,000 steel shell casings for 155 millimeter shells. Now they probably are up to 20,000 a month. They and General Dynamics operates that plant, even though it's called the Army Ammunition Plant. Those shell casings are shipped to Iowa to a plant that's operated by a private company, I think it's Day and Zimmerman in Philadelphia. And they take explosives that are produced at a plant in Tennessee that's under the BAE Systems, which I think you have a BAE Systems plant or plants in Canada. So the explosives come from Tennessee. The shell casings come from Pennsylvania. They're assembled in Iowa. And then they're shipped to Ukraine, to Israel, and, you know, held in stockpiles, and other of our so-called allies. So the industry, if you say, well, what's in the future for the United States? Well, it's somewhat what same thing that Zelensky's talking about. He wants 1 million drones, and the United States wants to be able to produce hundreds of thousands more of these 155 millimeter shells than they're producing right now. So you say, well, okay, we want a ceasefire in the Middle East. We want a ceasefire in Ukraine. Suppose that happens. Well, it seems as though the military planners don't anticipate ceasefires anytime soon, because once they increase these plant sizes and productions, they must have already a vision of where we're headed. Otherwise, would we be spending billions of dollars to basically increase all of these things? And I think this is happening, you know, with people all operating in super slow-mo, while these people are racing ahead, you know, to planning for the next war. It seems so surreal to me. I was talking to a friend of mine about this who was fasting too. And I said, it seems to me as though I'm looking at people walking in the streets and doing everything normal, but they're hollowed out inside. So there's nothing inside. What? And he said, well, you know, if that's the truth that you see, you know, you should say it, even though it seems weird. But that's how it seems to me. It's like we're human beings. What are we here for if we can live with this, you know, as you can tell, I'm very wondering about what I'm experiencing.
Well, you've been at this a long time. So have I. Have you ever seen the likes of this? I mean, I know that this is the worst moment I can remember.
Well, I turned 85 years old on January 13th, and I've been in Vietnam. I wasn't there during the worst of it, but I have seen people killed. I have seen people grievously injured. I was at a visit when I worked for Marion Old Fathers and Brothers. I visited war zones in Africa. I visited famine in Africa in 1984, 85. Saw children who I'd never seen anything like children who were literally bones with skin over them. But I have never seen anything like what's happening now in terms of the public acceptance every day of a slaughter and immiseration of 2 million people. It's just, there's no really words for it. All we can do is just try to be out in the street as much as we can. That's the only thing that really keeps me going is actually to be being out in the street, talking with people and lobbying as best I can and all that. If I was not doing anything, some people might think I'm kind of crazy right now, but I don't know what I would be doing with myself.
Well, I remember Vittorio Aragone was an activist in Gaza many years ago, dead now, and his book and his motto was Stay Human. And it seems to me that this is what this is all about. This is a test to see if we will stand up to this dehumanizing, mechanized mass slaughter, starvation, reduction of population, or we will resist. It's as much a war against us as it is against the people in Gaza, although they are the first, but they won't be the last. Nick, sadly, we're fast out of time. Again, Nick's Morturn's article is at covertactionmagazine.com. It's Welcome to the Slaughterhouse, co-written with Jack Gilroy. Nick, thanks a lot for coming on the show again to talk to us about it today and for all the work and effort that you guys are putting in. We are a small but potent group.
Thank you very much. I haven't abandoned hope, and I guess you just caught me at a moment in my life where I just am pretty stunned almost every day.
You're not alone. You're not alone in that, and that's for sure. I want to also say thanks to Nick Gottlieb and remind you to check out his work at CanadianDimension.com. Thanks again, Nick, for coming on, eh?
Thank you, Lars.
Or else to be subsumed. They said it was impossible, an endeavor that was doomed. Every 30 seconds, a plane would fly away to deliver to those trapped 5,000 tons a day. More than 2 million supplied by air alone. Thousands of airdrops flown. Watch the aviators streaking through the sky to try to find out how much cargo they could fly. Planes crashed as they do, 100 people died, but the flights kept coming, no way to put aside. Needs of all these people to have something to eat, to have fuel and medicine and shoes upon their feet. It was in West Berlin way back when, and it could all be done again to save the Gaza Strip, or forever wonder why we just let all the Palestinians starve and die. Watch the aviators streaking through the sky to try to find out how much cargo they could fly.